There was a creek that ran into the sea close to the settlement, and I followed it upriver through flat terrain until after several hours I reached its spring at the foot of a steeply rising mountain range that transected the island like a giant wall from north to south, some 6 or 7 miles wide. I knew that on both ends where the mountains reached the sea, the terrain was so precipitous that it was impassable, so that the only way to the other side, if there even was another side, except another steep declivity into the sea, was to cross the mountain. The best, or only place to attempt this, was what seemed to be a saddle, right in the middle of the range. The altitude of this saddle was not high, maybe 2,000 feet, but for someone who was not a trained mountaineer, there was no direct ascent. Crevices, screes, and pikes frequently forced me into arduous detours, and often the routes I followed ended in impasses from which I had to retrace my steps and try a different approach towards my goal. A task not made easier by the fact that in the craggy landscape of the slope, the saddle often disappeared from my view, and I could only guess at its direction. The slope was so steep that little vegetation had managed to secure a foothold, so mostly my ascent led across bare rock. Only further up, near the saddle where the ground was more level, trees and larger bushes were growing. Up there, I could hope for soil and softer ground below my feet, but I soon realized that long before I might possibly reach it, the sharp edges of the limestone would have cut my already bleeding soles to the bones. I took off my dress, and with the help of a sharp rock, tore it into 2 pieces of cloth which I wrapped around my feet, tying them with the ribbons that came in quite handy for this purpose. A dress wantonly destroyed, which had been my owner's property. For a moment I smiled at the thought of how unlikely it was that I'd live to face the punishment. From now on, my leather jacket was my only garment. As it only reached down to my hips, I would have offered a nice view to anybody climbing up that mountain behind me. But, alas, there were no other human beings, and not even larger animals for probably hundreds of miles around. As I kept climbing, and the sun first reached and then travelled beyond the orbit's zenith, heat, thirst, and exhaustion began to take their toll upon my strength and slowed me down. But I knew that I had to keep on going, and finally I gained the top of the scarp. From here on, the ground still rose, but much more smoothly. Trees and a fresh breeze that came from the west provided shadow and cooling, and patches of soft grass comforted my weary feet. Another half hour or so, and I reached the saddle, and what was waiting for me there was a little paradise. A shallow recess of lush green vegetation, trees bearing nuts and ripe fruits, plants with spicy edible leaves, and a spring. After drinking, I sat down for a while on a moss-covered stone next to it, with my feet in the cold, clear, fresh mountain water, and then I indulged in the pleasure of washing the sweat and exertion of the climb off my whole body. A wonderful place, I thought. It would provide me with all I needed, should I prefer not to die from hunger and thirst, but to freeze to death from the winter's first cold. But this was still a while off. No need to worry about it now, where each day was a new gift that I was determined to make the best of. To the left and right, the mountain shoulders rose, but I had done enough climbing for today. Ahead of me, the ground sloped down, at a grade that made it comfortable to walk. Through the trees, I could glimpse the sun and the blue of the sky, which at some line I could not clearly make out, turned into the blue of the sea below. I walked fast, and I had not realized how long and how far down again I had walked until I got to the precipice. I stepped out of the wood, suddenly face to face with the evening sun that was hovering above the horizon, and a few feet in front of me, the ground ended abruptly. 50 feet below me lay a small bay, and, maybe 500 feet away, the sea. I had finally reached the other side of the island. I had to admit, though, that from what I could see, it did not hold many promises for someone seeking hardly less than a miracle salvation. Could I even get down to that bay? There seemed to be no way to climb down that cliff. Maybe, if desperate enough, I could climb around the bay until I stood right above the sea and then dive into the water, hoping not to hit a rock. But how could I ever get up again? It was then that I saw the rope. It was tied to a strong tree, a thick, sturdy rope, with knots at each foot of its length. This, I had no doubt, was a rope ladder that was here to provide access to the bay. For today it was too late, and I was too tired. This place above the precipice was not as paradisiacal as the saddle recess by far, but it did offer some thorn bushes which bore edible berries and a thin trickle of water that emerged from underneath a stone, so I was content. I found a small recess with a soft mossy ground, broke off a couple of leafy twigs from a nearby tree to cover myself with, rolled up, and fell into a deep sleep. When I woke up the next morning, I needed a while to remember where I was, and I missed the rays of the morning sun until I realized that here on the western flank of the mountain, it would be late in the morning until it rose over the ridge. By the color of the sky, it was still quite early, which suited me fine, and after a frugal breakfast of water and berries, I went over to the rope, unwound it, and let it fall down the precipice. As I had been confident it would, it reached down onto the pebble-littered sandy ground of the bay. I climbed down easily, ignoring the aching muscles of my legs, and walked the short distance towards the shoreline. The sea was calm, clear, and inviting, and despite the water being freezingly cold, I took off my jacket and went in, and swam out as far as I dared, cautious of the temperature loss and possible dangerous currents. Turning around and scrutinizing the coast, my small bay in the middle of the cliff line that stretched to both sides was the only place I saw where I could get back on land. It seemed that my expedition had reached a dead end indeed. I swam back, got out of the water, jumped up and down to dry and get warm, smiling at some imaginary watches, put on my jacket again, and walked back towards the rope, when I saw something I had not noticed before. The dark, narrow shape on the bay's northern wall was not a shadow cast by a protruding rock. It was an opening. The lower end was some 5 feet above the ground, and easily reached. The aperture itself was high enough that I did not have to bend my head, and wide enough for me to walk through without having to squeeze. Of course, I went in without hesitation. Inside, after the end of a small curved tunnel, it was pitch black dark. I knew that after a few minutes my eyes would be able to see in the dim light that crept through the narrow opening, but out of restlessness, or out of cockiness, I did not wait, but stretched out my arms in front of me and proceeded into the darkness. I kept on walking with careful steps, and finally my hands touched something. Something round. With a hole in it. Another hole. A jagged edge. Oh my God! A skull! I emitted a shriek and retracted my hands, and then I dared not to move until my eyes were finally able to penetrate the darkness, and then I found myself not just inside a cave, but inside a nightmare. The wall in front of me was covered with skulls. I turned around. The entrance was now to my right. To my left, still inscrutable blackness. And in front of me, on the opposite wall, blurred rotund shapes that could only be more of those skulls. But what really caused the horror that I felt was the dark looming figure that instinctively I knew to be the ghastly idol of some dreadful death-bearing deity. And in front of it, a large block of stone could be nothing but the deity's heathen altar. Even though the idol faced the entrance, not me, I felt as if its fiery red eyes were staring straightly into mine, its full attention directed towards me, its intense burning presence piercing my brain. I stood transfixed, unable to move or even to breathe, until I pulled all of my strength together, resumed my breathing with a piercing scream, and ran towards the cave's mouth, not caring about the uneven ground or possible obstacles, just out as fast as I could. Not even thinking about the height of the entrance, haunted by all the demons of hell as I emerged into the daylight, I fell down the 5 feet, jumped up, ran a few steps, tripped over a boulder and fell flat on my chest. The pain and the impact and the lingering shock from what I had seen in the cave taking my breath away again, and for a few seconds it got dark before my eyes. When my breath and my sight returned and I tried to get up, I saw the man standing in front of me. He was nude, and he was beautiful. His skin was the color of bronze, and there was no hair on him, except the straight black hair that fell from his head down to his shoulders, held back from his forehead by a thin cord. His body was that of a warrior, slim but muscular and strong. His dark eyes looked at me as I lay before him on my side, first at my face, then his gaze moved down and rested upon my bare-shaven crotch. I watched him in awe. I saw the knife he held in his hand. I saw his penis grow to a full erection. I stood no chance against him. I slumped back, and then, without thinking, I turned to lie on my back. I shut my eyes and waited for his penis or his knife to enter my body, or both. Suddenly and unexpectedly, I felt a wave of arousal shaking me. I felt my vulva opening up. I felt my heart pounding and my breathing becoming faster. I felt deep shame that he saw me like this, and the shame added to my arousal. I opened my jacket to expose my breasts and my erect nipples to him. When I could not stand the strain anymore, I opened my eyes again. He was not there. No one was. I jumped up and ran towards the rope. I climbed up the rope faster than I had ever thought I could, filled with an irrational fear that was worse than just fear for my life. I screamed while I climbed, but still I felt the sensual touch of the rope between my legs, the pressure of each knot against my crotch, and when I reached the top and pulled the rope up, I could not help from making it run across my thighs again. And when I had pulled it up completely, I coiled it up, and then I lay down on my belly upon the heap of rope with its knots, and pressed my crotch against it, and moved my pelvis in small circles until a series of orgasms quenched the fire that was flowing through my veins. I had masturbated frequently, from my childhood to the time at the university, but to a slave girl it was not allowed, and I had soon learned to adhere to the rules. So this had been the first time in many years now, and I enjoyed it deeply. The orgasms and their afterglow, even though, as soon as my thoughts became clear again, I was thoroughly confused by what had triggered my arousal. Also, the fear came back, though it was not as strong as it had been. It did not border on panic anymore. It had no irrational depth. It now just felt like the natural reaction of someone doomed to die to stumbling across such a persuasive display of death, and the reasonable wish to get as far away from it as possible. Which, I had to admit to myself, on a small island could not be very far. And the nude bronze-skinned warrior whom I had seen? I decided not to think about him anymore.